It's you on the Arms Room with Glenn
and John.
Woo! We are in the Cowtown studio, brought to you by Cowtown Range. Our show today brought to you by AR500 Armor. Check them out at AR500Armor.com.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta talk about the armor test we did.
It was pretty epic.
A couple weekends ago. They were incredible.
Mm-hmm.
They stop everything.
They do.
If you guys didn't listen to last week's show, we talked about them in depth. I'm just going to mention it again. We took the soft armor. We took Rheinlig, their Rheinlig 3A, and their Hybrid 3A. We put them up like 5 meters from the shooters.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone had 9mm full metal jacket. One guy with 45 ACP full metal jacket. And we just started unloading on these things. We put about 25 rounds into the Rheinlig before we finally got penetration. And there's no way you're still standing after 25 rounds, by the way.
No.
And this is full metal jacket at very, very close distances. Armor is typically tested with hollow point.
Mm-hmm.
And then the hybrid never actually failed. And at one point, I was shooting it point blank
range. Like contact.
Yeah, I mean, almost right on top of it. And I think we ended up, I was the last shooter on it, and we put like 40 rounds into the thing. 50 rounds, actually.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think it was 40 when I started. Anyways.
400 rounds.
Shut up, Mason. You're out of work.
No, that's what we put on the steel.
So then.
At least.
So then we switch over to the steel the next day, and we've got ceramics. Level 4 ceramics and their level 3 plus steel. The ceramic started breaking after about, about 8 rounds of 5.56, mm-hmm. 223 stuff.
All still at really close range.
So we were still very close. I mean, we were shooting at about 10 meters or so from that, 7 maybe. But the steel, holy yeah. mackerel. Well. I mean, we shot that several times. We hit it with some 30, excuse me, we hit it with some 30 cal. Then everybody did mag dumps with the M4 into it, full auto. Then we stepped back to about 25 and let one of the guys rip a 50-round belt through the saw on it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just didn't care.
Nope.
At the end, it looked like a brand-new steel plate. I mean, it got hit well over 200 times and nothing. Amazing stuff. I had a question sent to us this week. John, I want to get your input on it.
Uh-oh.
Josh sent us a question.
I love being put on the spot.
Yeah, you're welcome. I totally didn't prep you for this at all.
No, not at all. Thanks, buddy.
So,
all right.
It's about helmets.
Okay.
You know, we talk about armor a lot on the show. We talk about AR500 armor, all that. But we never actually talk about helmets.
They suck.
And so the question was, what do you think about helmets? And so my reply to him was, well, look, I mean, I own some, if that tells you anything, right?
Yeah.
But I use them more as a way to comfortably use night vision optics than I do to protect my noodle because they're really only ballistic capable like 9mm.
Ish. They'll deflect 30 cal and stuff. Like there's a handful of stories of guys in overseas where some local national doesn't know how to handle his gun appropriately and cranks around off while they're walking close in close proximity and it'll ride the helmet out.
Well, I got a buddy who ended up walking away instead of a bullet in his head. He did get a TBI from it, but he didn't get a bullet in his head.
Yeah.
From a 30 cal.
Yeah.
An AK round that went in the helmet, but the helmet basically slowed it down enough and kind of kicked off its trajectory enough, kind of yawed it, so to speak, that by the time it got inside the helmet, it wasn't very capable anymore.
Helmets have a place. I don't think ballistic helmets have a whole lot of place unless you're actually fighting a war.
Right.
Where there's explosions and hand grenades and, I mean, a good comfortable bump helmet, that's always handy. It's just like a bicycle helmet. So it's
going to. Yeah, the Pro-Tex are great.
Yeah, the Pro-Tex, the Team Wendy's, like there's a bunch of really good high quality bump helmets that are out there.
For ballistic, I own a one from Gladiator Protective. It's great.
Yeah.
It's got the Team Wendy suspension system in it. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I wear it really when I'm rock and nod, and that's about it.
Yeah, I wear my helmet like twice a year.
So, you know, the question was like, well, look, if you're going to invest a lot of money into chest protection with armor and everything, wouldn't you also do the same with helmets? And I'm like,
I would not, no.
I wouldn't. The problem is helmets are – to get a good helmet, you're going to spend a lot more than you're going to get than you're going to spend to get full front and back protection and a good carrier and armor. Like good ballistic quality helmets are incredibly expensive.
Even getting the older ones is expensive. I know at Allied Surplus we sell them for $200 for a military issue.
Like the old Kevlars?
No. That's for the new issued ACH, the Advanced Combat Helmet. We sell Kevlars for like $70. But
so, I mean, even then it's still...
But Kevlars aren't level 3A.
Yeah, they're not.
Whereas the ACHs are.
Fragged.
Yeah, they're frag only. So, you know, my take on it is I would definitely put my money elsewhere.
Yeah.
Before buying a helmet. Is a helmet the worst thing you could own? No, definitely not.
If you've got the extra coin, buy one.
Yeah, buy one. But if you're going to be rocking night vision, buy one. Because you don't want the old skull crusher head straps.
No.
You know, you want something that, you know,
can be pretty much anything else other than the skull crusher headset.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. If you're going to buy a helmet, you have to use it. Because it's a whole other world, man. You add 3 to 5 pounds to your head. Mm-hmm. Life starts to suck.
Yeah, exactly.
It takes some getting used to. So,
make sure, you know, to the rest of you who are listening, make sure you ask us questions. We get, I don't know, I would say at least a half a dozen questions a week on, you know, hey, can you send me more information on this, or, you know, what's your favorite optic, or all kinds of stuff like that. I'm surprised we don't get more questions. We have so many listeners, I'm surprised we don't get more questions. But I think people are just hesitant to send them in. But ask us your questions, and we're happy to answer them on the air and talk about them. A lot of stuff we talk about on our show comes from our listener questions. Sometimes we do whole shows about listener questions. So if you've got questions, make sure you email us, info@trainingaz.com. How was your week last week, John?
Last week it was rough.
Was it?
Well, the wife's out.
Oh, right.
Wife's out of town. So right. Pretty
just you and the boys.
It's pretty gnarly.
It should be awesome, dude. It should be like a man party.
Yeah. Except I don't have any men that live with me. I have
babies.
I have a baby and a toddler, and dudes do not have the same mental capacity for dealing with those things as women do.
How dare you say such a thing? Because I totally agree with you. But political correctness says, we're all equal, John.
No, we're not.
That's true.
We're not. I don't care what you say. Not all men were created equal. And no, men and women are not equal. We are not same.
Goodbye
to half our listener base, by the way.
We're equal in the sense of we all have an equal opportunity. We all have equal rights and all that. But we're not equal in the same that, you know, my wife can pick up the same heavy stuff I can.
No.
Or, you know, she can do some of the things I can't. I can't do some of the things she can.
You can't comfort 3 screaming children at once.
I can't comfort screaming children. I can't handle all that pressure. I can't make babies in my belly, grow them, and shove them out of my body. Can't do that.
Not yet, Glenn.
Not yet, but I'm looking forward to the day.
I am not looking forward to that day.
But I can impregnate you, Mason.
Yeah. Whoa! Yeah.
You can have my baby. It'll be awesome.
Too far.
Well, we just picked up a whole new listener base. This is going
to
get awkward.
Just trying to diversify, man. Just trying to pick up that extra listener base. I had an awesome week. I'm going to tell you about it since your week was so crappy. You can live vicariously through me.
I hate you.
I know.
Oh, boy.
So I had a great week. Went to San Diego.
Yeah.
Spent a few days. Had a great time on the beach. Love the beach. Love body surfing.
See, I don't like the beach.
Oh, I love
Never
body,
have.
I love body surfing the waves, man. We had some great, great waves. Had a great time. Went to SeaWorld the following day with the fam. Been a while since I've been there. It was awesome. Did a really cool thing with my oldest daughter. Did the dolphin interaction.
Aww.
Where you actually get a swim with the dolphins.
Mm-hmm.
I never really thought much about dolphins before. I'm pretty sure I'm gay for dolphins now. That was incredible, okay? If you have an opportunity to go to SeaWorld and do the dolphin interaction, you need to check that out. Dude, you swim with them.
I'm writing that in my Glenn's Dynamically Disruptive Life notes.
Yes, I'm gay for dolphins.
Yeah, it was incredible, man. Like, the dolphin's right there. You get to feed the dolphin. You get to, like, pet the dolphin. You get to hang out with them in the water. You get to make them do all these
cool
tricks.
Did you ask him about shaving?
Did I ask him about shaving?
Yeah, shaving the dolphin.
Oh, shaving dolphin. That's funny. Oh, that's a funny inside joke.
Yeah, it is.
So then you ride them, not with the sense that you're like sitting on them, but you know, you hold on to them and they swim you across the pool. It's incredible. They're like little missiles. It was a blast. If you have the opportunity, you should definitely go. And by the way, we always go. My family and I typically go in October to San Diego because San Diego does a lot of discounted stuff for kids. So if you have kids, you should go. Like. For example, this dolphin interaction, which is not a cheap thing. If you bought an adult ticket, you got a kid ticket for free. So my daughter's the one who wanted to go, and when we, you know, got there, and they're like, yeah,
"You don't have to pretend that your daughter's the one who wanted to do the dolphin thing."
Well, I was totally into it for her, and then they're like, "Oh, if you buy an adult ticket," and I'm like, "I'm all about this, man. I'm going swimming with dolphins," and there's all kinds of other things. You got, like, discounts at museums, and some restaurants participate, and all kinds of stuff. So if you got kids,
military members get in free to SeaWorld too, I believe, right?
I don't know if it's free, but I know that SeaWorld gives pretty heavy discounts.
Yeah.
I know SeaWorld gives pretty heavy discounts to military members. So it was cool. I mean, it was normal SeaWorld stuff. It was a lot of fun. You got to see a lot of cool animals. Shamu show's not what he used to be. Super disappointing. But all the other shows are really great. And they don't get into the water with Shamu anymore. Because all the Shamu's been like, or the killer whale's been killing all the trainers and stuff.
That's what happens when your pets start eating you. You so, stop like, interacting with
so
them.
So it's just not as much fun as it is with like the other shows. But SeaWorld was cool. And swimming with the dolphins was freaking amazing. I didn't think, I was like, whatever, this is going to be a thing. It's really for my daughter. This will be fun. I'll get in there. I'll pet the dolphin. Afterwards, I'm like, freaking, I want to be like a dolphin trainer. I want a dolphin. I want to buy one. I want to buy a pool. I want to put a dolphin in it. Have a dolphin every day. But not going to happen.
For breakfast with my tuna sandwich.
Turns out, it's kind of expensive. Also,
oh, wow.
Mini-Me
got
his first elk this weekend.
He did.
Nice.
He did a great job.
Your child is responsible for slaying more bodies than I am.
Yeah.
Where's the elk jerky?
It's not for you.
Doll.
But it was great, man. It was a good hunt. One shot, one kill. Good shot on a cow elk. And great opportunity, great experience. Had a lot of fun. Learned a lot of important lessons for him about hunting and big game hunting. He was the first big game animal. He's done a lot of small game stuff before. But it was awesome, man. He had a great time.
Did he have to drink the blood?
No, they only do that in Red Dawn.
Oh, okay.
Okay. All right. He did get a hold of the heart, though. He liked that. But, yeah, it was great. And, he got experience packing it all out, which is not fun. Because I'm a traditional hunter. I don't hunt on ATVs and quads or anything like that. I don't necessarily believe in that stuff. So for hunting, it's not my thing. But, we got to hike in and then pack it all out. He got a great experience packing out a lot of heavy stuff. So good stuff. Good
Poor
stuff.
Kid. Poor
I
kid.
I loved it. Loved it. Did you hear that the one of the heroes from the French train got stabbed?
I did hear something about that.
Yeah, in a bar fight in Sacramento, I think it was.
Yeah, and you know what's funny? This is why I love the news and the media, because they're making a big deal of like, hero get stabbed or whatever, and it's like, he's in a bar fight, man. I mean, he did a heroic thing. I'm not discounting what he did in France. That
doesn't make him...
That was
like
great.
A badass.
They're just normal people.
But now he went and did something stupid. He got stabbed. And they're making a big deal. And now people are like, it's because the terrorists are out to get him, and they're trying to single these guys out. And they're trying. I'm like, whoa, easy tinfoil. Relax.
Yeah. Take your hats off, Jade Helm.
Relax, Jade Helm. Lizard people.
You can't say that on air, Glenn. They're going to close down the studio.
Oh no. It's the same thing with the shooting that happened at NAU on Friday morning.
Whoa.
Yeah. So they're like, it's another school shooting. Listen, media people.
Stop being stupid.
Stop it. I know you're just a bunch of puppets and you're just reading whatever they feed you, but stop. You're stupid. You're a stupid person. Stop saying stupid things.
Yeah, don't listen to the media. The media is stupid.
Media is stupid. Turn off your radios.
This week's show brought to you by Heroes Media Group.
But wait, we're cool, though, so you can listen to us.
Because we write our own material, man.
That's true, we do.
Here's the problem.
But he's right, because it was just a fight between frat boys.
It was a frat boy fight, and somebody, it's like 2 a.m. in a parking lot outside a fraternity, a frat boy fight.
It was a bro fight.
Someone inserts a gun into the situation, stupid things result, and now they're like, it's another school shooting. It's not another school shooting. It happened on school grounds. That doesn't mean it was a school shooting. Stop, media people, spitting your silly truths and lies, and it's ridiculous. Write your own material like us and be cool.
Yeah.
You puppets. What else?
Media would be a lot more entertaining if they all wrote their own material.
It would be. Would be. Did you see the new California bill?
Oh, God, no.
What are they trying to ban now? No, they're trying to stop school shootings.
Oh, are they going to make that illegal?
Oh, well, they're going to make carrying a gun on campus illegal.
Even cops can't carry? Isn't that already illegal in most places?
Governor Jerry Brown signed, I'm reading off the website, the news website. Governor Jerry Brown signed legislation to ban the concealed carry of handguns at schools and colleges on Saturday. Blah, 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 blah. This is about permits. This chick goes around, a reporter goes around and gets the opinion from students about it. The bill is designed to help students and faculty. Unfortunately, though, it's media, so it says students and facility instead of faculty because nobody proofreads anything anymore because we're just stupid. This bill is designed to help students and faculty – I'm going to go ahead and fix their stupidity – stay safe when they're on campus. With the rate of school shootings growing, Governor Brown hopes this bill will bring an end to it. You are an idiot! Oh, my God! Didn't we rant about this last week?
We did.
Oh, my gosh. You serious? Are you serious with this crap?
Yes.
You wipe they your aren't. Own butts?
Stop. Stop. They don't know. They don't know what they don't How know. Do they don't function? Understand.
You can't shatter their poor delusions, Glenn.
How do
stop
they
it.
Function? Oh, you know what we're going to do? Here's how we're going to prevent crime.
This isn't going to get us in trouble, is it?
We're going to create more
it
laws.
It might.
We're going to create more laws to prevent all these crimes that are happening. Because obviously, the laws we have are not good enough. We need to make more laws that the criminals will also not obey. Oh, stupid. So stupid.
Glenn, 2016. Glenn John, 2016.
Hell yeah.
Counting to 10. Counting to 10.
I'm calling. Goose Fraba.
I'm going to write you guys on the ballot.
I'll write my name in. I don't care. I'd be a great president.
All right. One last thing for
Vice President.
No.
Yeah, Vice President. No. I thought I was going to be the president. You can't be. We both can't be president. Hey. Hey.
We could start a coalition government like all those other countries that fail.
We could do what we want.
We'll work in shifts.
We'll be president.
We'll work in shifts like
we'll be president. We'll be what we want.
Yeah, buddy.
Are we gonna hot rack the
12-hour shift?
Hot rack the Oval Office?
We're going to hot rack in the Oval Office.
Hell yeah, bro.
As soon as you get out of the seat, I'm right in it.
I'm down.
Making decisions.
Let's do it.
You don't even need to brief me on what you did before.
All right, no.
Don't even tell me what happened on the previous shift. I'm just gonna come in.
I don't even care.
I'm gonna come in and I'm just gonna start rolling with a new shift.
And we're gonna make Mason the Secretary of Defense.
Secretary of Defense.
Woo, SecDef.
Yeah, why not?
And don't worry,
make,
I got
we're gonna
this.
Make Matthew the Surgeon General.
Oh yeah. Ooh, I like where this is going.
And we're gonna make Josh Secretary of State, so he can go settle all of our
affairs
around the world.
I like where this is going.
Violence of action.
All right, so before we get on to spoiler, to our guests, I got last thing going here.
All right.
And it pisses me off.
Of course it does.
What, something that makes Glenn angry? I don't believe that.
This is not possible.
Wait, hold on to your hats.
Okay.
Kids, here it comes. A 10-year-old kid was shot while hunting in Utah this weekend.
Why does that piss you off?
Let me tell you why.
Was it from another hunter?
Yes, it was. But it wasn't. First of all, I don't like it because how it all happened. So the kid's in a quad or whatever. I'm assuming like a side by side, and he's by the heater. And another hunter pulls up and goes to talk to these hunters or whatever. He's pulling his rifle off the rack. And here's the part that pisses me off. Get ready for this. I'm gonna read it. Deputies say the man got off his four wheeler and was removing his rifle when it went off. No, it didn't go off. That jackass. Freaking broke at least two of the primary firearm safety rules because he's one of these jackasses who thinks he's freaking above the safety rules because he's been around guns his whole life and he knows how to shoot them like any idiot can't figure out how to put rounds in a chamber and pull the freaking trigger. So thus he is an experienced freaking genius.
Let's not give people more credit than they're due. I have seen people unable to appropriately load a handgun or unload one may or may not have been a local.
I'll give you that.
Sheriff's deputy at one point in my life that I witnessed not be able to function a handgun.
I'll give you that. So I'm back to my whole media thing here. Look, media, quit reporting this nonsense. It didn't just go off. Call it what it is.
Guns don't
this
just go
jackass
off.
Jackass shot and killed a 10-year-old boy because he's an idiot.
And he'll serve no jail time because it was an accident.
Well, the good thing is that accidental shootings are still crimes.
I know. It should be murder.
But, freaking know the firearm safety rules. Teach the firearm safety rules to your kids. If people around you don't follow firearm safety rules, then don't shoot around them. Don't hunt around them. Don't be around them. Nobody is above the firearm safety rules. They exist for a reason. People who jump out of the back of C-130s at 30,000 feet into a dark ocean and swim on shore to kill bad guys all day follow the firearm safety rules. So should you.
Did it say where the kid was shot?
No, but I mean point blank range with a freaking hunting rifle. He was dead as a doornail before they even came and picked him up.
That sucks.
It super sucks, man.
Also get medical training too.
And get medical training because I mean it's possible. I don't know. It doesn't say where or how he was shot, but it just really sucks because that one kind of hit home with me. It's like I literally get home from taking my 11-year-old son hunting,
mm-hmm.
and I read this story about how a 10-year-old kid, same age as my son, goes out is hunting and gets killed. And we're around other hunters out on public land, and I'm thinking, oh my gosh, if someone accidentally killed my kid, I'd kill him on the spot.
Yes. Like there would be little to no hesitation on my behalf.
Like, I mean, I hate to say that absolutely. I wasn't there. I'm not going to Monday morning quarterback anybody who was there. I know how I react to things. And if that had happened and that guy point blank shot my kid and I try to render medical aid, which would be my first priority, and it's not happening, I just turn around and shoot that dude.
Yeah.
Like, you're done. You and me can't be on this plane at the same time. We can't survive together. This is not going to work. One of us has got to go.
You are no longer allowed to have my oxygen.
All right. Before I get on another crazy rant like last week.
All right. Let's go. Let's get on with this.
Let's get our guest on the show. Joe. How you doing, Joe?
Doing great.
Are you enjoying our conversation?
Yeah, it's hilarious. All right. I also got a sugar high from the birthday cake, so it makes it that much more funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, John brought in some birthday cake today, and it was basically a lump of sugar baked.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
With ice.
You're welcome.
Thank you. All right. So, Joe, we kind of you and I met, 2 months ago?
Yeah.
About that.
Pistol course.
Yeah, the pistol class. You've known Mason. Sorry. You've known Mason for a long time.
No.
My condolences. When did you start carrying a gun? Let's kind of get right into it. When did you decide in your life that you wanted to insert a firearm into your life?
Going through high school, tend to be a violent high school. I guess not necessarily the school itself, but the people surrounded itself by. And I was young and dumb, and used to smoke a bunch of pot and drink a lot and go out to parties and stuff. And I'd actually seen a couple people. At that time, I'd known one person to be shot and killed, a good friend of mine, and we had it in our heads, you know, maybe we should carry a gun. I think I was 18. Got a first gun, didn't know anything about it. The first time it went off, it shot my best friend's finger off. The very first night we had the gun. And that's a true story.
I hadn't heard this story before.
Whoa.
Yeah. Turned down self-defense. That's the same gun I used to defend myself against a bunch of people. You know, I think 2 years later, that was actually the first time I shot the gun. First time I'd ever shot a handgun.
So the first time the gun was fired, your friend blows his finger off with it.
The tip of his finger, yeah.
Tip of his finger off with it, okay. And then the first time you actually shoot the gun is in self-defense.
Yeah, no right. clue. No idea how to use a gun.
So, but you were carrying a gun. How old were you at that time?
19.
All right. So, but you were carrying a gun.
Yes. Irresponsibly.
So, irresponsibly. All right. what was kind of your thinking? Like, why did you want to get involved in the idea of carrying a gun? I mean, like you said, you'd seen some people carry guns and, you know, parties and violence and all that. But
I don't know. I guess when you're younger, it's this I'm a cool guy thing. I used to rock. It was a P95 Ruger. Rocked an Uncle Mike's holster, outside carry, you know.
Yeah.
Showing it off.
Yeah, buddy.
It's ridiculous. Extra little mag pouch up front, you know. And I don't know. It's kind of egotistical when I was younger, you know. People used to call me Big Joe. They still do, but I can't stand that Big Joe from 10 years ago, now that I think about it. But I don't know. Honestly, it was just like a last-ditch effort, you know, if a fight didn't work or something, someone pulled a gun out. It was basically going to be exchanging gunfire because I didn't know how to shoot a gun.
Right. So, for example, if you were to find yourself at a frat party at NAU.
Wait, what?
It's too soon.
too soon for that? It's never too
soon. Luckily, those guys wouldn't have gotten shot when I pulled the gun out and shot it. When I pulled the gun out and shot it, it was in panic, never looked at the sights, pointed it in their direction, and after everything settled down, all the rounds were in the ground. It was embarrassing, you know. I had no idea how to shoot a gun. I was shaking. I actually threw up afterwards. My knee was buckling. Hand was just soaked with sweat. And bullets went right into the ground. Never even went towards them. And it was a realistic. It was an eye-opening event. Just far as I have no idea what I'm doing with this thing. What if it happens again? Never. Might as well have not even been a front or back sight on it. It's kind of like that class where I shot my front sight off. Right. Those things might as well not even been there, you know. I had no idea what I was doing.
So you had no training, obviously.
Wait, hold on. Time out. Go back. You shot the sights off of your gun?
Well, it fell off. I
forgot the Loctite.
It was the...
Oh, okay.
I thought I Loctited it.
Loctite.
Oh, problem. The Gen 4?
Yeah.
With the plastic clip-in?
Well, he actually did some aftermarket sights.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. All right.
You just got to Loctite them. Remember?
Yeah.
Always Loctite.
Blue Loctite is your friend when you put things on guns.
Always Loctite.
I was for sure, and I talked to Mason. He's like, no, we were there when our buddy was putting it in. And I was just like, oh. I was like, we did it. I was like, totally forgot. It was embarrassing again. 10 years later, still embarrassed to shoot guns.
So at this point, no training. First time you'd ever actually fired the gun. You get into an altercation. What happens? You think you're just getting your ass kicked? You think you're getting shot? What happened?
Well, what happened was we were at a football game. I was supposed to be watching my friend's parents' house. They left out of town. They couldn't trust their two sons. They were always throwing parties and stuff. And sure enough, we get a call from the the younger brother, and he's like, hey, I just made a bunch of money at this Kager. And my buddy, his older brother, was like, hey, good job. Where are you guys doing a Kager at? He's like, the house. And we're like, oh, crap. And his mom and dad both asked me, you know, and watch the house while we're out of town. So we went over there. I think we were freshmen in college, and a bunch of high school kids over there. We ended up trying to get them to leave, getting into a big fight. We were outnumbered. We were fought pretty dirty. I got my butt kicked while I was, you know, constantly fighting the whole time. I don't really know how to fight. I've been in a lot of fights, but I don't know, like, kickboxing or anything. I just know how to swing punches. And
okay, hold on a second. That's a really important statement, Joe, because
wait, what happened?
There's so many people who say,
here,
like,
let me turn my Instagram off.
I'm stop here. Instagramming. Pay attention, John.
John's not here.
Instagram fag. All right. So
I'm gay for dolphins.
Hey, I don't mind being gay for dolphins. I'll admit to it. All right. So
all right.
It's really important because what Joe just said is something that we always talk about, and that's
oh, is it learning how to fight?
Well, he's been in a lot of fights, but then he says, I've been in a lot of fights, but I don't necessarily know how to fight.
Yeah.
It's kind of because as we're talking about guns here, it's kind of the same thing. Like, people own guns, they carry guns.
I've shot a lot of guns, but I don't know how to shoot a gun.
They don't actually know how to shoot. How many people drive? They don't really know how to drive. They've just been driving around all for years, but they don't necessarily know, like, what to do in a
you
really
don't know what you don't know.
Yeah. Bad situation. So that's keep going, Joe, because that's an important note about what we're going to talk about here in a minute.
So getting this big fight, and there's like six of us, and there's a bunch of them. We end up coming out on top. Well, we get word, my best friend Tony over here is a younger kid saying that they're going to come back with this army. So I called a little group of friends of mine, and I was like, hey, get up here as fast as you can. We made the mistake of waiting in the road for them. The first group that came wasn't our friends. We thought they got way too close and start throwing beer bottles. They're swinging bats and everything. Start pounding against the door. We hear guns. We hear what we think is gunshots. We lock ourselves in the back gate. Bunch of guys that were supposedly hardcore and with us all jumped the fence and scattered. And it was just me and my best friend Tony standing
Everybody's
there.
Everybody's a gangster. Full time to do gangster.
Exactly,
shit.
Right. Exactly. So we end up getting bear mace. This guy jumps over the wall with an extinguisher of bear mace and just covers Tony with it, covers me with it. Tony got it a lot worse Ooh. Than I did. I backed up about 5 or 6 feet, and they were slamming the bats and trying to kick in the front door where we had the women of the party. Like, we put them in the living room trying to keep them safe, I guess, and kick Aww. Open that gate. I'm panicking, pull the gun out, start shooting, and that's what led up to that. But I guess learning firearms and learning, like, tactical mindset and stuff as you get older. I mean, why even be in that position, you know? You completely avoid those things just not being there.
So from that point, you have this experience based on, you know, just normal kind of everyday life, really. And then you pull your gun out. You fired 7 rounds, didn't hit anything, shot the ground 7 times, basically, because I think you were telling me earlier, like, the cops were, like, literally, like, here's all 7 of your rounds. In the ground, and but you still won, right?
Yeah, I guess barely.
But barely, right? But you still, like, the guys. What happened when you started shooting?
They ran my buddy, chased them. You know, just trying to, I guess, put more fear, intimidation into them. Just constantly trying to get them away from the house. You know, and they scattered. And yeah, I guess in a sense we barely won.
So I mean, in a sense you won. So I think a lot of people will walk away and be like,
well, I got this.
I got this, right? I mean, they jumped over, they bear maced us. All my boys all split, you know. It was just me and my buddy bear maced.
Yeah.
You know, they're kicking in the door with baseball bats. I mean, this sounds like a...
like a slow Tuesday.
This is a slow Tuesday. This is like a self-defense kind of situation. I mean, you've kind of inserted yourself in this situation. Like you said, it was kind of a series of poor choices that led to this, but you're still kind of in a self-defense situation. And the gun comes out, it starts getting fired. And what we talk about all the time in our classes is, typically speaking, in a civilian engagement,
the mere presence
of a firearm is enough to change things, yeah. Right? If the mere presence is enough, then the discharge yep. is enough. Because people are like, oh, you won't shoot it. And then when you do start shooting, they're like, I'm out of here.
Oh, crap.
Nobody wants to get shot, right? So they all split. And that's kind of where we fall into, this kind of law of averages. We fell into that average engagement here with the discharge and presence of a firearm was enough to completely dissolve the situation. Now, that being said, a lot of people would walk away from this saying, I won. But you didn't walk away from that saying, I
won. Oh, no, absolutely not.
So what happened with you? You walked away from saying what?
Yeah, well, after that had happened, the gun got taken away. We didn't really – I mean, we had our shotgun and everything, but we didn't carry a pistol after that. Get the gun back 6 months later. They give us the extra mag. That was another thing, is I had a – fresh mag, never thought to reload it.
Right.
When we went chasing him down the street and no cover, concealment, just going after him, a couple rounds left in the gun, you know, never thought to
reload and you're chasing him, which is also not really civilian tactically sound.
Bad off.
So I think about a year or two went on, and I was just playing dress up. You know, I got into wearing tactical stuff. I was like 360 pounds. They shouldn't even make like size 5X, you know, tactical vest and stuff. And had my go bag and stuff. I was getting into prepping and survival stuff when I was younger. And as time went on, I was kind of thinking, you know, I want to do more for this. You know, during that time, I had another friend get shot and killed, and I wanted to learn everything, you know, tactical or trauma medicine, and learn how to actually use a pistol and a rifle, because, you know, I was still carrying it and not having that mentality, that situational awareness. So I was like, I'm going to get some training. And took my first class, and the instructor, he kind of knew where I was at in life. You know, he knew I was real unhealthy, and I was, like I said, I was a pothead. I drank a bunch of whiskey all the time, and that's what I did. I partied, and he calls me out to a class. It's going to be like an 8 to 9 hour class, and he's like, yeah, bring everything, you know, bring your AK and your handgun, bring your your tactical vest, and fill up all your mags. And it's like 10 minutes into the class, I'm throwing up. It's just dead, you know, and it was embarrassing. He's just kind of like, you know, rethink your life, go home. You're not fit to fight. You're not fit to protect your family. You know, you got to really assess the situation before you think you can just jump in one, you know. And that was a real eye-opener for me. That was the real humbling experience, embarrassing. You know, my ego was out there for the world to see, and I wasn't capable of doing any of that, you know. So throughout about a couple years after that, I just slowly started to change my diet, change my habits, change where I was going. You know, I was always going out to clubs and parties and stuff, wanted to be in that scene, and definitely had to put a lot of that behind me. You know, I still have my moments, but, you know, I leave hours before anybody's drunk and make sure I try to get home safely. But I had to, you know, lose weight. That was one of the first things, was actually get in a position where I could take a full day course or a full 2 day course and understand what it's like to fight with a pistol or rifle, being exhausted. And, you know, I wasn't capable of any of that stuff, you know. And then the future was going to come where I started doing fugitive recovery, which didn't turn out to be much. I ended up stopping just recently, but having to wear body armor and have that front to back, and to think you're going to wear that for 10 hours a day, you know, being super out of shape, was unrealistic. And so that's really where it came from. Most of the stuff I do now, as far as like training students and being an NRA instructor and taking classes, you know, I have the mentality student first, you know, still, you know, get trained as much as I give training. And I realized I wanted to teach people what not to do, the actions not to take, as opposed to here's these cool guy stories. You know, I'd been in quite a few gun standoffs and fights and that scenario. And as opposed to telling people like, this is a life you can live or something. It was more of like, these are mistakes I've made in my past. Don't go that route. Don't be that guy, you know, avoid those situations as opposed to having to go through them to get home. So that was that's where my mindset comes far as training students, is to completely be responsible and not have to deal with all that stuff, all the mistakes that I had made and my friends had made.
Well, and that's when you first told me kind of your, you know, your story a couple months ago, that was, it was a really great example of kind of where I think a lot of people are with their firearms training. You know, you carried a gun, you didn't really know how to use it. You pulled it out once. It didn't work out. Well, let me back up. It did work out. Right? It worked out in the sense that you walked away and you won, quote unquote.
Nobody died.
It was great. But you meant to hit somebody.
Yeah, and I had this mentality.
And you
know,
didn't.
Yeah.
You know, like you wanted to apply this force, but it didn't actually work. And had skill been a requirement, that thing would have gone a lot differently. You know, absolutely. In this case, just the tool's presence was a requirement. But, and you walked away from that and said, hold on a second, the tool worked, but I didn't. Now,
I was the tool. You know,
yeah, I was the tool, not the gun. So you walked away from it. You lost a lot of weight. You got in better shape. You started taking training. You became an instructor. You became an NRA certified instructor. You started teaching kind of basic level classes. based on, you know, your own experiences now with training and life experiences going, hold on, these are the mistakes I've made. I want to teach other people how to not make them. I think that is probably one of the cooler stories I've heard about how people kind of transformed themselves. Because in this lifestyle that we lead, it's not just about the gun.
No. It's actually very little about the gun.
Yeah, too many people think they can just, oh, well, I wear a gun every day, so I live the armed lifestyle. Well, you don't really live the armed lifestyle until you have changed your lifestyle to fit that particular path that you've chosen.
Well, it's the same thing even where Joe had to start with like a fitness thing. Like you said, you had all your 5X tactical gear. You went out to this class. Your buddy, I think, probably was kind of setting you up for a lesson.
Absolutely.
And, you know, he brought you out. You had all your tack gear. You had everything 10 minutes into an eight-hour class. You're barfing because, you know, it's heavy. It sucks. You're out of shape. You can't really effectively do all this kind of stuff. As you mentioned earlier, you're kind of playing dress-up, but you're not really actually learning how to effectively use your gear.
Exactly.
And I think that that's probably one of the biggest weak points that we see in the averaged armed citizen is the fitness aspect. Because, like, I went to California last week.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't carry my gun. I don't carry my gun.
I know. What? What?
I know.
You don't live by concealed because you don't want to risk going to federal prison?
I know. It's crazy. And some people live
retards.
By that.
Retards.
I won't ever be unarmed. Never, ever. And it's like, I will carry. Well, look, that sounds great.
Until
I don't
you're in prison.
Go to prison, man. I got wife and kids. I can't afford. When you look at how case law, people like, I went to a class as a student recently where the instructor said, you know, if you find yourself in an active shooter type situation and you pull your gun, even if you're legally carrying it, you know, no court's going to. Are you freaking kidding me? Read, man. It's fundamental. All right. Read case law. A lot of people have been prosecuted for carrying firearms in illegal situations and applying force. There was a guy in California who had an AK-47, defended his home with an AK-47, and ended up getting charged with it because he had an illegal weapon. AK-47s are illegal.
Banned by name.
It's like, dude, what?
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to prison for that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I didn't carry my gun. Does that make me unarmed?
No.
No, I'm not.
You just have one less tool available.
I still had other tools available to me. Part of – and I think, you know, one of the things we teach in our class all the time is the primary tool I had with me, as Joe's already talked about, the primary tool I had is my mindset and my body. I mean my number one piece of equipment that I carry around with me everywhere I go is armed. It's ready. You know what I mean? It's I'm not the fastest runner in the world or the best fighter in the world or the strongest guy in the world. But I'm pretty well equal on all those, you know, on all those spectrums. I maintain a high level.
A jack of many trades and a master of a few.
Of a few. And so the thing is that no matter where we go, we've got that number one piece of equipment. And I think that was a big eye-opening experience for you, and that's a good takeaway. As far as the, you know, the next thing and the training and all that, I mean, what did you see when you started getting involved in training? You've trained with a couple different people now, and then you went and became a certified instructor, and now you kind of teach some of your own stuff. What did you find out as a civilian who had never really gone to any classes? You know, you're not a military guy or law enforcement or anything like that. What did you start to see? What was the evolution of your training? What did you seek out first, and what do you seek out now?
Even in the training, there was an evolution of growth far as you go to one class, pick some things up, and be like, oh, that was awesome. You go to another class and realize how much that last instructor was full of crap.
Right.
And that was huge, you know. And I didn't want to just jump in. I kind of have the mentality where, like we were speaking about, I stay in my lane. You know, I'm not going to offer this, you know, this precision rifleman's course or this combat shotgun course when those aren't practical things that I've trained on and, you know, constantly do. I stay in my lane, you know, far as, you know, basic pistol, basic rifle, and I guess going through the motions and the training through the years is you see a lot of people just like the nothing against the NRA, but they teach a different style of training, you know. I teach this offensive style of training in a sense, you know, like that is going to be a fight. You are going to fight for your life. And
yeah,
it's not
there's a difference between shooting with a gun and fighting with a gun.
Exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's like you told me when I took our first defensive rifle class, there's nothing defensive about using your rifle on somebody.
No, you're
like,
shooting at somebody, you're offensive.
That is an offensive action, but that's, you call it that because that's what people recognize and what people know.
It's a politically correct term. And people try to dress it up, you know, in the industry everybody tries to dress up their classes so they sound dynamically, adaptively different or whatever. But it's all the same shit, right? I mean, it's all the same. You're either teaching someone how to shoot a gun, which is like an NRA class or like a basic level class, or you're teaching someone how to fight with a gun. Like, you know, you're doing
synergistic firearms use. That's what we're going to start using.
Synergistic?
Yeah.
Why that?
Is that a word?
Because it's a good
word. I know synergy is a word. I think you just made up synergistic, though.
All right. No, you guys continue your conversation. I'm going to Google that. Synergistic.
So anyways,
Joe, if I can figure out how to spell it.
So as you started going to these classes, I mean, you kind of mentioned something that I find kind of amusing. You know, you started going and you were like, oh, wow, this is great, because you had no point of comparison. I had
nothing
right?
to compare to, yeah. Exactly.
So, like, you started going and you're like, oh, this is so awesome. These guys are rolling around, ninja, they're all kitted out, camouflage, all that kind of stuff. And then you started going to other class and you were like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Those other guys were morons, you know? So how did that kind of evolution, you know, you started, I think the most, you know, the average person looks at training and they go, I really want to go get some training, but I'm not really sure who to go to. Do I go to an NRA class? Okay, they're going to learn something very, very different there. That's very basic. You're an NRA instructor. I've been through the NRA instructor programs. I'm an instructor and all that. I've honestly never taught an NRA class. I got the instructor, like, no lie, I got the instructor certification so I get the insurance because it's a great deal.
Absolutely.
But other than that, like, you know, I've never actually taught an NRA class. Yeah. I mean, even going through the instructor class, I was like, oh my gosh, I'm never going to teach this. Like, you know, you're teaching first shots pistol from arrest and all that kind of stuff. Yeah,
it's almost a dangerous way to teach.
It's very, very, very interesting. So there's, you know, people go, well, I'll go to an NRA because they're well known for guns. Or they go to the other side and they're like, well, I need to go learn from this Navy SEAL or whatever, because he's a badass.
Or this YouTube guy, because he said that he's really good at stuff.
Yeah, or I need to go, oh, this guy's got a great YouTube channel and his social media stuff, and he's super fast at shooting targets that he knows are there, and they're totally predictable, so he's super fast at that. Thus, he must be an amazing instructor. You know, and so you look at stuff like that, and people are very confused, and the training world is so broad in the types of classes.
And it's full of charlatans.
It's full of charlatans, and it's full of people who are just teaching an experience.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know? They offer an experience as opposed to this
legitimate idea of training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's scary, you know, it's scary with a guy kitted up in body armor behind you worrying about getting your ankle shot off, you know?
Right, right.
You're about to clear this room.
Take your armor off and put it around your ankle so you don't get a freaking round in the ankle.
Yeah.
So what are some things that you discovered? You know, again, I like this perspective because you started off like, I have no training, I'm a regular guy, and now I want to train.
One of the biggest things was the waste of time and money and ammunition going to the desert shooting. Mm-hmm. Just going to the desert to do a mag dump with a bunch of people, or just going out shooting. Get some training. I mean, if you have the time to waste that money, if you have the money to buy a gun, you should also save the money to take the training. You know, it's
mind grenades.
Oh my God, people's heads are exploding all over the interwebs right now.
Mind grenade.
And I spent a ridiculous amount of time in the desert with friends, you know, when I was younger, just wasting money and ammunition and the time. And it was like, get some training, you know, even being at a range with stagnant target and stuff. It's just this, you know, it might be good for fundamentals or muscle memory or something, but I mean, realistically, you have to get out there and train, you know. And a lot of it was, I was still, in a sense, playing dress up. You know, I did the fugitive recovery for a little bit, so they required you to wear body armor. And so I would train that way, in a sense, but most of my training is going to be real life, you know, at church or at a school or something. God forbid something happens in a restaurant or a movie theater or something, I'm going to be wearing what I'm wearing, you know, and I'm going to be pulling my shirt up, pulling my gun out, you know, and I'm not going to have this fast super draw that I would train without when I'm in a class because I'm wearing an outside the waistband holster, you know. So a lot of that was the importance of training. I mean, we hear it all the time, training how you fight and fighting how you train. That's a huge thing, you know. So even when people are taking a class, you know, and they're dressed up and their fatigues and they're, you know, go to the class how you dress every day, you know. Pull the gun out how you're going to really pull it out, you know. If you're carrying concealed, train concealed the whole entire day, every single time you train, you know. Don't go out of your lane opposed to taking all this high-speed stuff and, you know, or people training for the zombie apocalypse, you know, they're out there, their gear and all their guys and stuff. But, I mean, are you even going to get to your guys do you even want that attention putting on the body armor and running around with the cool bag and stuff with the patches? I mean, do you want that kind of attention? You know, even God forbid something happens horribly where that is the case. You know, do you want to be dressed up how you've been training this whole time and get shot, you know, two or three blocks down the road because you have all this attention attracted to towards you, you know? So going through the training far as being in the desert and getting good training, getting bad training, it was definitely this full circle I took of, wow, I have no idea what I'm doing. And then a year later, it's like, wow, I still have no idea what I'm doing. And then, you know, finally going and coming into your own, I guess, finding out, you know, what works for you. I've taken classes where they're having us do these silly, ridiculous things. And I mean, I'm still a big boy. I got a lot more weight to lose, but, you know, I'm not going to be doing ninja flips, like you said, and pulling out two guns at one time, double fisted, a steel target.
What? That's what?
It's just not me.
It's just not me.
The only role in John Woo movies.
That's right. So where, what do you look for now in training? Because, you know, you mentioned you kind of started off, you went for the super high speed ninja stuff, which I think is where a lot of people train, because I think a lot of people who aren't.
It's cool and it's sexy.
It's sexy.
It's fun. I mean, yeah. You get out, you get to put your, to steal one from Pat Rogers, you get to put your costume on.
Your costume.
You know, your full multicam cried $10,000 worth of crap to go out and hang out with your buddies on a Saturday and a Sunday. And
there's not necessarily anything wrong with that.
No.
But as far as training goes, you're not really getting the full effect. You know, a lot of these, that's one of the things that this whole generation of war that we've been fighting now is one of the ways it's affected society is that now it's like cool and sexy to be all operator and dressed up like that, you know, so and everyone tries to look, yeah, and have a beard, of course, you know, you gotta have a full beard. But too many people get hung up on how it looks as opposed to how you actually are supposed to operate when you're out there.
Me and Mason were just talking about that the other day. I was like, how did fashion end up in the tactical community and the training community?
Social media, I blame fads.
Hipsters.
Man.
Fads. Yeah. You know, one day the guy's running, rocking the 5'11 boots, and it's not cool too, so he goes and rocks the Kryptek, and then next year, who knows if it's going to be triple cam or...
Yeah, instead of multi-cam, triple cam.
Triple cam. Quadruple cam. It's all about... In this industry, it's a lot about fads, and people get sucked into training fads. They get sucked... You know, they see some high-speed video, some
hence
high-speed instructor
the head whip.
Or whatever. Like the tactical head whip, this... scapular twist stuff. There's all this crazy stuff that people are doing.
I just call it all shenanigans.
And it's like, you know, the whole time, like, and, you know, in our training, it's kind of like, we just kind of always looked at it and kind of chuckle, and we still do because we've been in the business long enough that we've seen a lot of things come and a lot of things go. We see training companies come and go. We see fads come and go. We see cool guy. You know, you, by the way, like, here's
You've seen
an
like
example.
four camouflage patterns come and go in the last, I've been with you for almost 5 years now, and I've seen like four separate camouflage kits come and go.
I mean, here's an example. We went hunting this weekend. I wear camouflage when I hunt because it helps you blend in your environments.
Yeah.
Right? And we're typically pretty close to these animals. I mean, when Mini-Me made his shot on that elk, it was like 60 yards. I mean, we're pretty close. And because that's how my old man taught me how to hunt, right?
That's hunting, bro.
Get
that's
close.
Stalking
you
and hunting.
You can kill them, right?
Yep.
And, you know, I wore old school BDU pants because I have a lot of those left over because I'm pre-ACU days. So, you know.
Lucky.
OCP.
So, you know, I got a lot of that crap. And so I wore my old BDU pants and a Marpat jacket.
You mixed?
I mixed. Oh my gosh. I wore a Marpat jacket because I like Marpats.
Oh, and a Kryptek backpack.
Did you get a Marine to sign off?
And I had a Kryptek backpack. I did have a Kryptek backpack.
Did you get a Marine Corps permission slip to wear that Marpat?
Shut up.
It's not official issue, so it's good to go. It's a...
it's a knockoff Marpat.
We're fine. Knockoff Marpat.
I have a buddy I work with at the shop who's a Marine. I always joke about that with him. I'm like, hey, can I wear this? Can I have this backpack? Is that cool with you? Am I allowed to wear this?
Is it okay with you?
You know what, Mason? Being a former Marine, I give you my blessing. Wear whatever you want.
Am I getting called out on the internet for being a poser for wearing Marpat? And you know, and my son wore, I don't know, Realtree Walmart shirt or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it's just we don't care about cool stuff. You know, cool patterns don't matter.
Does not mean we don't like cool stuff.
It doesn't mean we don't like cool stuff. Cool stuff looks cool. But look, the fact of the matter
looks
is
cool.
We've seen stuff come. I mean, when we first came into the industry, John, you've been with me long enough. What was the cool? Multicam was cool back then.
Multicam was super cool.
Multicam was
If you had multicam, you were like rich because it was really expensive too.
Back then it was still licensed and everything.
Yeah.
It was like a big deal. And then it became ATAX.
Yeah,
ATAX. ATAX was the
ATAX didn't last very long.
It didn't, which is odd because I actually like the ATAX pattern. I think it's pretty good.
Oh, I think they tried to outgrow themselves.
Maybe they did. And now it's Cryptek. Now Cryptek is the big what to do. And who knows what it'll be next.
Well, Cryptek started in the hunting community.
It did. It actually is a hunting pattern. It's a good pattern. I like it. It's good stuff. It's all good stuff, you know. But it's all – the point is that there's all these silly fads. And everybody thinks, like, if you don't have this or you're not using this technique or you're not setting these steel targets up in front of you, totally predictable, shooting them on a timer 15 times until you get it under whatever your dream par time is, you know. It's just – that's shenanigans. It's just like that's not training, man. You know what I mean? That's not training. Great. I'm glad you can run a 1-to-5 drill on steel at a known distance static.
And then hammer throw your empty pistol at the target.
Like that's super awesome. You definitely possess a skill set that is you've obviously worked on and increased, and that's awesome.
We'll probably never use in real life.
Yeah, but let's keep this. If I had three bad guys in front of me, I would not do a 1-to-5 drill. I would kill one of them. Then I would kill the second one, and then I would kill the third guy.
Wait, what?
You know what I mean?
No.
And we would all be moving, and we'd all be trying not to get shot.
Exactly.
And assuming that if you dump the first guy, guy number two and three are even still around.
Yeah.
But you're sure as hell not going to be running a 1-to-5 drill. Now, things like that have their place, and I'm not knocking. I don't want to get involved in that conversation right now. But, like, those things have their have their place in building certain skill sets. Unfortunately, for the majority of trainers out there, they're not using those exercises appropriately.
Right.
They're not using them to train the right skill sets. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They're using them to kill time in a class. They're not using them to build the skill sets that those very specific skills. Look, Kyle Lamb, if I remember correctly, is the father of the 1-to-5 drill.
Yeah, I have no idea.
All right. Kyle Lamb is a freaking body slaying, widow making, you know, crazy man, right?
OG.
You should come on the show, big, Mr. Lamb.
Big time OG. His reasoning behind that exercise is not to see how fast you can do it.
No.
That is not his reasoning behind the exercise. You know? But today, that's all that's done, and it's taught, showed in classes, and the instructor gets up and he runs it in this insanely short amount of time, and everyone goes, ooh, ah. And then they do it in an insanely short amount of time, and they post a video on social media, and now they're trained.
Yeah.
So we know that's not really, like, the right kind of training. So, Joe, what have you seen? I mean, as you've continued along this path, you've kind of mentioned you've been through the fads, you've been a part of the fads, you've seen them, you've gone through that. Now where are you at?
I guess as opposed to the tactical, the practical, you know, you are the weapon, your gun is a tool, that mindset, you know, the humble approach towards teaching as opposed to, you know, screaming in your face or I have all this background and knowledge, you have to do it my way. That's one thing I learned is, I mean, being the size I am, not all things are done the same exact way. And I guess just the practical approach to teaching people, you know, the realities of the fundamentals and the realities of being in a fight and slowly and I guess the whole slow is smooth, smooth is fast thing, getting them there to that point as opposed to just throwing them into now you're wearing body armor and you're clearing this room and now you're tactical when you leave this class. Mm. You know, you can kill everybody in the whole world. That's just an unrealistic way of
thinking. America!
So what are you looking for now? As a civilian who's kind of made who's made that process of you started carrying a gun, you got involved in a situation, you realized you needed training. Even though you quote unquote won that situation, you realized, oh my gosh, I'm not really as good as I thought I was gonna be. You need training. Then you started training, you discovered you weren't training with the right kind of people, and now you've kind of mentioned all these things. So what, as a civilian who's been through that process, which I think for a lot of people out there is really the same process they're either involved in or they're just about to get started in, what do you look for now? Like, what are some key things? When you go to take a training class from somebody, what are some key things that you're looking for?
I like the idea of being put into different situations as opposed to just focusing on a target or different targets or different ways to shoot them or different patterns in shooting them. I like, you know, the situation you're put in. I've done some UTM and simunition training. That, you know, that's real training far as accidentally shooting someone in the back that shouldn't have been shot, you know. And I'm looking for that. That's the critical thinking, I guess, you know, being able to think while you're shooting as opposed to just focusing on, again, this tight group and a target, being actually able to think going through. I mean, when we were doing your training class, we went through so many scenarios of, you know, are your children or your nephew or niece with you? You know, are you going to move this way? How are you going to approach this person? You know, are you going to try to talk the situation down? Are we going right to guns? you know, what's in between us. Do we have cover? Do we have concealment? You know, obviously we need to move. Where are we going to move to? There's a quote that you said about moving in the class, and I forget it, but I know you know if you can repeat it, as far as the moving without a purpose is just, you know,
just a wasted energy,
wasted movement. Yeah, yep. Waste of energy.
Yeah, moving without a purpose is wasted energy, and we see that kind of stuff a lot in training. You know, where people are just they're doing this lateral left and right, forward and back kind of stuff, but they're out on a square range, and it's good again from a fundamental standpoint to just understand the things that are going to start changing mechanically when you're moving and drawing and moving and acquiring your target and everything. But there comes to a point where you have to start thinking about, why am I moving based on the target in front of me? Why am I moving this way based on the people around me? Like, one of the things we do in our classes that kind of freaks students out at first is we will do two relays with movement. And I'm pretty sure we did this in the class you were in, where we kind of pulled half the class back and you guys kind of had freedom of movement.
Yeah.
While you were shooting. And then people were like, well, wait, what if this other person moves in front of me? And it's like,
it figured
don't
out.
Shoot them. You know what I mean?
Step one.
Because that's real life, man. Yeah, I mean, in the real world, there's going to be people around you. You're going to have to figure out, can I move to the left? Can I move to the right? Should I move forward? Should I move back? And we use a lot of different targets, and those kinds of things are definitely important. So you're looking for more of like a realism, more of a kind of a critical thing.
Well, I think you hit on the key point for any type of training you're gonna take, especially when it relates to firearms and the use of firearms as a civilian, is you have to look for that critical thinking aspect. You know, a lot of people go out and you blow a big hole in a target and you feel really badass at the end of the day. But yeah, you learned and you practiced your fundamentals, but you didn't learn anything about thinking through a scenario. Mm-hmm. You know, whether you've got your gun in your hand or not, being able to think your way through that before, you know, recognize it. Okay, I could take course A, course B, or course C. You go through it and you critically evaluate those. And this all happens very quickly once you reach a certain point. But being able to choose that appropriate course of action at the appropriate time.
Well, it's important to get the fundamentals. I mean, understand, yeah. Of course, because in our classes we always focus on the fundamentals.
Oh, first, absolutely.
Right? You have to be able to, you know, get your hits, manipulate your gun, move, and think. Those are those are the four fundamentals.
Well, it's like you always say, there's no such thing as advanced shooting. There's advanced application of the fundamentals of shooting.
Extreme. Yeah, extreme application of the fundamentals. Like, we have advanced classes that we kind of joke about because they're not really advanced. They're just extreme applications of fundamentals. You still have to apply the fundamentals. But once you get the fundamentals down, now you have to start thinking about, okay, how are we going to apply these things in the real world? That's where we start looking for realism. So if you were going to – I mean, again, I think so many people out there who carry guns, own firearms, you know, they feel like they're prepared. They feel like they're ready. They've been shooting their whole life. They, you know, they think they're awesome. I mean, for a lot of us who are in the training industry, most of what we know – and this comes as a shocker to a lot of our students. Most of what we know, we did not learn in some military school. We did not – you know, we learned the importance of training, right? But we didn't learn most of what we know in that. I mean, even most of my guys, when they come to work for me, most of my guys have more military experience than I do. And I mean, they learn a lot from me. I learn a lot from them. We learn a lot from other people. You know, as you said earlier, we're constant students. And so the reason I bring that up is because a lot of people go like, oh, I'm going to go seek out this instructor because he's XYZ, whatever. Like, well, great. What's he going to offer you? You know, what's in his course materials? He is running you through a bunch of drills. It's just a day of shooting with XYZ instructor. Because if so, then great. But understand what you're getting into. If you just want to go shoot with this guy so that you can take a selfie with him and post on Instagram or whatever, great. That's awesome. If that's your goal, knock yourself out. But if you actually want to learn something, understand that not everybody who's been there, done that, is actually a good teacher. And I think that's kind of what you saw as well.
Absolutely.
So now you also, I mean, we mentioned it a little bit before, but you're also an instructor now.
Yes.
And you teach mostly basic stuff and kind of, as you said, kind of the offensive application as a citizen, as a normal person.
Yes. Right. Just a real, like I said, a realistic way to approach it. You know, that you teach someone how to be a range warrior and how to all these, you know, camaraderie, and of course I teach marksmanship, but competition, you know, sometimes it gets lost, you know, and I think those things should always be applied. You should always be doing everything and anything you can to, you know, just have as much experience behind you as you possibly can, but sometimes they're so focused on that they forget to teach you, hey, this is going to be a gunfight, there's going to be blood and screaming and crying and bullets fly both ways, everybody might get shot, nobody might get shot, and you probably got to work on that, you know.
So if you were going to take, if you were going to give some advice to the average person who's kind of on that path that you've been on, the same path you're on, what's the advice you would give them as far as inserting a gun into their life?
Fundamentals first, the mentality of you are going to be carrying a gun all the time. That's one thing that I speak to my students about, and I bring up the same thing, you know, 8 hours later in the class, and it means something completely different to them now because they took the training, and that what the same speech I gave in the beginning hits more close to home after they've, you know, gone through that training and they see I need to get more training, you know, the fundamentals first and always. And just like you said, the extreme application of the fundamentals. It's never a super cool high speed, I'm doing this and I'm awesome at it. It's constantly reapplying and reassessing the fundamentals as how you're using that firearm and the mindset of I carry a firearm now. Tell people all the time, be an asset. Don't be a liability. Don't get in my way. Don't be a victim. Be an asset to society at any cost.
Any parting words on that, John?
I'm coming right in the middle of a yawn.
No. Go get training. You don't know what you don't know.
Train.
Yeah. I mean, that's really it, you know. If you think you're awesome, you're probably really not.
Yeah.
Look up the Dunning-Kruger effect.
Dunning-Kruger.
That will answer all your questions.
One of my favorite things. All right, Joe, thanks for coming on the show today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
Thanks for sharing your story, man.
Yes, sir.
All right. Before next week, I got to mention we got our precision rifle class coming up this weekend.
Have fun.
We still have 3 slots open.
I'm sorry I can't do it.
People need to get involved in this class. It's a lot of fun. Military law enforcement discount, refresher student discount. It's an awesome class. Josh, our lead instructor, Josh, is freaking so incredible. He's so good at teaching. Come out and check out that class. It's going to be in Peoria. Contact us for more information, info@trainingaz.com. If you don't have the equipment, we may even be able to provide you with some.
Yeah.
So even if you want to learn about precision rifle, but you may not have a precision rifle, contact us, and we can probably provide you.
I know a dude that's got a loaner rifle because he's going to be tied up doing some other stuff that same weekend.
We've got the equipment for you, so make sure you contact us if you're interested in the class. It's a really awesome class, 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday at Cowtown Range in Peoria. Next week, we're talking about something that's going to be kind of different for us.
Uh-oh.
We talk about vehicle security. We're in our vehicles all the time, but nobody ever talks about it.
Oh, yeah.
Mason has been begging us to do this show.
He has.
I actually get to talk at this show, and they can't limit my word count. So.
I just saw his video the other day, jumping out of the truck.
Oh, they haven't seen it yet.
Yes.
I'll post it up when I do the show next week. We'll post it up on our Facebook.
So excited. So we're going to be talking about vehicle security. You know, everyone's in their vehicles all the time, but nobody really thinks about how to react in a vehicle. So we're going to talk about some very interesting things to consider with that and the idea of offensive driving and how to practice offensive driving and what you're looking to do in offensive. Everyone talks about defensive driving. We're going to talk about offensive driving.
Sweet.
So you want to get more on that, tune in next week for our show all about vehicles and good stuff. Until next time.
I'm going to do some Googling now.
Yeah, you are. Until next time, stay aware, stay safe, and train hard. You've been listening to The Arms Room.